Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast. We have Ziana on today, a unique and amazing woman who doesn't let society define her. First off, she's been to a relationship shaman, which I don't know what that is, but we can find out together soon.
She's also built an Airbnb empire. Seriously, she manages and owns so many Airbnbs. She hit her fire number just on the cusp of 30, and we're excited to have her on today.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Welcome, Ziana.
Hi.
We have also got our awesome co-host, Jay, in the studio today.
Hey, everybody.
I'm super excited that you're on the show with us today. We have a lot to get covered, so let's get started. Tell us a background leading up to discovering FI.
I got into personal finance when I was like around 18 or 20, and my mom got me into it. She started getting interested in it, and we used to like watch Susie Orman show, and I read a bunch of books, and I started to just like invest very generally, like in a Roth IRA, and I had like a ton of student loan debt and I was wanting to just like pay it off as soon as I could. So just getting like ideas about how to be healthy financially, because both of my parents were pretty clueless. And so that was like something that was really interesting and important for me. But I didn't find out about like early retirement or FI until Mr. Money Mustache. And so that was like 2011. I found him kind of right when he started. And then I was just hooked. I was like, oh my God, I did not know that you could attain retirement so quickly. And it wasn't even about retirement, because so many people are like, well, I don't want to retire, blah, blah, blah. It's really about just like the freedom, you know, the choice to do whatever you want and to work some or to stop working for a couple years and then go back to it. You know, it just like lets you do what's fun. And that's why I think it's awesome.
Agreed. So how are you working on achieving FI, or do you consider yourself already FI?
I am, but it's sort of cheating. So like internet police, you know, I just feel like people are going to start hating, but yeah,
skip the haters. So
I think, yeah, totally. I think the way that I first thought about it is that it was kind of just similar to Mr. Money Mustache. I was like, you know what, if I can get 2000 or 2500 a month, which is kind of what he was aiming for, that's going to be about 600,000 and a paid off house, then I'm like totally good. So that was like my number. I was like, you know what, let me just like work towards that. But then I started working with Airbnb. And so I started doing short-term rentals, vacation rentals. And I realized like, okay, it's not fully passive, but it requires very little hours per week. And I can still like generate income of 2,500 a month and then not pay rent because I was just like renting my house and it was getting covered. So I was like, okay, can I make this a different sort of situation? You know, it's still covering everything in the same way, but it's not coming out of my mutual funds. You know, it's not just dividends. So
yeah. You pivoted basically.
Sure. I don't know that term. Is that something flashy you've come up with?
I mean, I think from what I know about your story, it sounds like you built it from the ground up. Like you started really scrappy renting properties in Boulder and then Airbnb-ing them out. Then you kind of built it into this little Airbnb property management-esque empire.
Yeah, totally.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you like started at the very beginning?
Yeah. So I heard about it from a friend who he was living in New York and he got laid off and he was like, you know what, I'm burned out, I'm going to go travel. And some friends told me about this thing called Airbnb. And I was really familiar with the idea of couch surfing, which is just staying in people's houses for free when you travel. And so I was like, I didn't have the whole stranger danger thing anymore. And I thought, oh, that's awesome. You know, having people come through your house, but actually paying, like that's a whole nother level. That's really cool. He said he was going to just try it because he couldn't afford his apartment and he was stuck in his lease, but he was going to go travel. And so he was always like giving me updates about how awesome it was. And at the time I was in massage school and I was just like not really in a space that I could start doing something new. I was just like, I don't have like space in my mind for this. And then after a whole year of him bugging me and being like, you should do this, you should get an apartment, you need to like rent stuff out, he told me that he made $50,000 on his apartment in that year. And in that time, I was already working on FI. And I was like, whoa, that is more money than I've ever made. you know, that's like a freaking salary. So I thought, okay, I gotta try this. So the way I started was just simply like with the apartment I was renting, I had a 2-bedroom and I had a roommate who was only going to be there for a couple months and it was already furnished. I had like furnished her room. And so I thought, okay, cool. When she leaves, maybe I can try this. And if it doesn't work, like I'll just get another roommate. And it was so good that I was renting her room. I was renting my room. Sometimes I was renting the whole apartment. So I had like 3 listings and I would just like go stay with friends or whatever just to make it work. At the beginning, you know, Airbnb wasn't really that popular. So it wasn't tons of money. Like it covered my rent and a little bit extra, but it wasn't like it is now where you can make like, you know, 2 to 3 times what normal rent is going to be. So yeah, there's just a lot of potential with Airbnb these days.
That's crazy. Were you ever super paranoid that the landlords that you rented the place from would just see the listing on Airbnb?
No, because it was such an early concept. Back then, I wasn't worried about that. I was worried about getting in trouble in some way. And I made sure that all my leases had subletting in it. So then I could say, you know, oh, I didn't realize. Like back then when it was so early, people didn't deliberately put it in the lease saying like no Airbnb-ing because people just didn't know what it was. So It was sort of like a gray area where it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I would have stopped if they wanted me to. But essentially my reasoning was like, there's tons of college students in Boulder that are trashing apartments. Like you just see totally destroyed places. And I had to keep it like really clean. And when stuff broke, I fixed it. You know, I was being a really good tenant in that way. And I was paying him whatever he was asking for, you know? So I don't know. It's definitely a gray area. But back in the day, that was just kind of how everybody was doing it, was with apartments and with something they were just renting. But I definitely had the idea that, like, I want to use this to buy something, you know, because I thought that would be, like, the most legitimate situation.
Right. Yeah, I really respect that. And I think a lot of times fear keeps us from doing things or we're like, oh, we're going to get in trouble or, you know, is this okay? Whereas just acting and then asking for forgiveness sometimes is, like, a speedier option, obviously within boundaries. But, like, I think I appreciate that you did this, especially back in the day. Nowadays, landlords put clauses not to do Airbnb. But what year was this?
2012.
Right. So.
So as my mother says, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's true. But, you know, still this day, like I think a lot of people are open to it. I guess the term now is like master lease. But you can talk to landlords and be plain about it and say, hey, you know, I'll give you like a percentage or we can split this or I'll pay you just a higher rent. And a lot of people are flexible about it. So you never know. I mean, it is worth looking into.
Absolutely. So you did that for your first property. And then what were your next steps? You started acquiring and renting multiple properties?
Yeah, I rented another place, another 2-bedroom. That one only lasted for a couple of months because the mistake I made there was that I rented in a building where the same landlord owned the whole building. So everybody had the same landlord, you know, so across the hall, I don't know who ratted me out, but somebody did. And, you know, it was easy for them to do. But even though they asked me to stop doing it and I kind of just played like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize that was not cool or whatever. I never lost my deposit and they gave me ample time to like leave. I sold all my furniture like that weekend, you know, and it was kind of not that big of a deal. Like I was scared of getting evicted or going to court or losing my deposit, you know, like back then that was like huge money for me. But it didn't happen that way. So it kind of made me go like, well, I guess it's not that bad.
How much money were you bringing in at that time?
Not tons. You know, I recently did an interview and they asked me for all the financials and I looked it up and I was like, whoa, how was I surviving on that money? But I did it. You know, I think I was just really primed. You know, I was already a college student and I could live on very little. And then I was doing like a super frugal mustachian thing. And so, yeah, I didn't really need that much. Like if I had my rent covered and I had extra for food and I was biking most of the time, you know, like everything was kind of covered and it was fine. So what was I making? I was probably making maybe like $1,500 or something and having my rent paid. So it wasn't like tons. And then, yeah, I built it up to like right now, I do kind of a different angle of it. I do what people call co-hosting, and I'm helping people who want to do Airbnb, but they don't want to deal with it, and they're going to travel for an extended period of time, and they want their house managed. So I've created a company where we manage that for people. And so I've built it from, you know, making like $1,500 a month to there was a point where I was making like $4,000 to $6,000 pretty steadily for a couple of years. And last month we made $18,000. So it's like, what? I don't know. Yeah.
Whoa. So the 18, what is that broken up into?
Well, that's just what Airbnb shows me. So I make a little bit more on other projects that I have going on, but it's not considering some of the other expenses. So out of that, it's probably like $13,000 gross because I have two homes that I own with other people. I own five places now and, you know, just like the expenses of the home. So, you know, utilities and lawn and all those kind of little things.
So I'm kind of surprised that you didn't make more at the beginning when it was kind of like the Wild West and there wasn't so many options available in the market. Because, I mean, Now Airbnb is like all over. Are you getting better at it or is it just changing that much?
Well, so I think like a lot of people get scared when they see a lot of listings, you know, so they're always like worried about competition. And I feel like there's like the difference between abundance mindset and scarcity mindset. So back in the day when barely anyone was doing it, also barely anyone was traveling on it. You know, like people were just staying in regular hotels. They didn't really know about it. So they didn't know to look there and you couldn't really charge that much. So nowadays, even in the slow season, my places are booked at least 20 to 25 days every single month. But back then, you know, you could like get the weekends and you were sort of scraping around for days, but it still all came together, you know, but it's just so much different. So yeah, from year to year, it was like, it was really filling out. And then also you could just start charging more and more. So I think from last year to this year, it's sort of the same pricing. And it's probably because there are a lot more people doing it, but there's so many more people traveling on it too. So I think it's just building up. Yeah.
Are all your properties in Colorado?
No. I own one place here in Boulder, and then I manage another 8 to 10 here in Boulder. It kind of fluctuates depending on time of year because people are traveling or not. Mm-hmm. And then I own four places in St. Louis. And then I manage places in like three other states. So just kind of bopping around. Just depends on who's calling me where.
Wow. Ooh. So did you buy the St. Louis property specifically for Airbnb?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So how does buying a property for Airbnb differ from buying a rental property, like a long-term rental property?
Well, the funny thing is I consider myself an Airbnb expert, or at least that's what people call me. But I don't know that much about being a long-term real estate landlord, you know? So, I mean, I think they're kind of different animals. And I'm actually a little bit afraid of the whole long-term thing. You know, I've never had to deal with like an eviction. With Airbnb, people pay up front, so I'm never chasing anybody for money. In general, like, the places are pretty well maintained and they don't really get destroyed because they're getting cleaned all the time and people are in there like looking at it, checking on it rather than having a tenant that you don't know what they're doing for 6 months. So yeah, I think it definitely is different, but I think the numbers are similar. If like, if you learn your real estate math, you kind of need to look at things in a similar way. With Airbnb, you can get away with buying in a market that's not typically a good investment just because you can make 2-2.5 times market rate with Airbnb. But I think it's dangerous in that way because a lot of people think, oh, cool. Well, this covers my mortgage, so it's a good investment. And it's like, that's not true at all. I think 90% of the time, houses are not a good investment and people
Amen.
Are better off renting. Yeah.
Amen.
Sure. So
houses have so much maintenance and little things that go on. I can't even tell you how many times I've been in Home Depot since I bought my place.
A lot. I know. I live there. I'm like, how do I get some sort of affiliate marketing with Home Depot so I can
Oh, you can.
Free? I know. I bet I can. I just haven't looked into it.
I told the people there that I might as well just get a part-time job so at least I get paid for being there.
Yeah, totally.
Jokes on them, though. I don't have time.
Yeah.
So I have a question. So let's say that I am somebody listening or myself right now, and I was interested in looking at out-of-state or buying an out-of-state property anyways.
Yeah.
We talked about what the major difference is, but can you describe how you actually did it? Like, did you fly out? Did you work with a realtor who's familiar with Airbnb things? You do it yourself? Like, what's the whole deal there?
Okay, so pause on that. Let me just say that the thing I was trying to finish up on the last one was that what I think is really important is that you need to like look at the math, and you need to say that even if your Airbnb had to turn long-term for some reason, like they outlaw Airbnb in your area, or all of a sudden it explodes and it doesn't exist anymore or whatever, worst case scenario, you should make sure that your place is still a good investment when it's having to be rented long-term. So for me personally, I like the 1% rule. I do like 10%, your 10 cap rate, whatever. You can look into what those terms mean. But in general, I want to make 10% off of my total price that I paid for the home every year. So with Airbnb, yeah, I'm going to make more than that. My houses are usually like 18 to 20 something percent. But I want to make sure that if I had to rent it long term, I could get 10. And that's my own thing. A lot of people are good with like up to 7 or even maybe less. That's up to you. But I just think that that is like one caveat, because people will look at Airbnb numbers and be like, anything's a good investment. But I don't think it's true. So that's with that. How I got into St. Louis, it was kind of a lucky strike of randomness. My friend had moved there, and she had been living there for a few years, and we grew up in Hawaii together. I had just needed to get out of town, and I was wanting to, you know, do something else. And I said, hey, it's about time. I should come visit you. And she's like, oh, great, because we're getting married. So come, you know, in June. So when I went to the wedding, I was doing like all the small talk with everybody. I kind of just was saying, oh, this is what I do, whatever. And people were like, oh, yeah, well, we have friends that do Airbnb, and they're doing really well out here and whatever. And then I knew my friend's rent was really cheap, but I didn't realize how affordable the homes were. And so people were telling me like, oh, our mortgage is only $300 a month. And I was just like,
what?
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. And they're like, yeah, we have a 3-bedroom with a front yard and a backyard and a garage. And I'm just like, where are we? So I decided then and there that I would come back and buy a home, you know? So I was there like exactly a month later buying my first rental place.
And then but you didn't use a realtor, you just did it yourself.
No, I did. So this is also kind of random luck. I told a friend that I was thinking about looking in St. Louis, and I took like 2 weeks when I got home to like think about it. I was like, okay, do I really want to do this? Let me call some friends of friends and find out about the area and do all my analysis and see what I think. And in that time, a friend told me, oh, I know this real estate agent that's licensed in Missouri and in Colorado, and he lives here in Boulder. And so I was like, well, that's kind of cool. So I met with the guy and I ended up working with him. But I wouldn't do it again that way. The way I do it now is that I have an agent that is there in St. Louis, because if he's there, then he can physically go to the home, and I have my guy like go do videos for me. So then I have them and I can like repeatedly walk through the home and check things out. So I think it's better to have someone local.
Wait, so you have purchased a home with a virtual situation where you were walked through with a camera? That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I bought all 4 homes sight unseen.
Dang.
That takes some brass ovaries.
I think she's
right
more
there.
Ballsy than us, Gwen.
Or crazy.
Yeah.
Or crazy. You know, either or.
Yeah. Well, you know, my reasoning with that is that, like, I can see what it looks like on the outside, but I don't really know any better than anyone else. So I have to get an inspection, and that is like law. Like I look through my inspections with like a fine tooth comb, and I found a guy that I love in St. Louis and I always use him. And that tells me everything. So it's definitely way more information than I would be able to see with my plain eyes. So, you know, I think walking through with a video is enough, and then getting his expertise really helps.
And then when you need to renovate, do you have a team on site that does that for you?
Yeah, I don't do that.
You just, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've purposely bought already fixed up. So there's tons of people in St. Louis that are like fixing and flipping.
Yeah.
And I totally see how you can make more money, you know, but I always talk about people. I talk to people about having like your spot in the real estate food chain, because like everybody's making their little cut, you know. So there's the guy who like bought the land and then he developed it. And then the guy who like changed it from there. And then the next person who's renovating it and whatever. I know that even buying off the MLS with a renovated home, I can make good money because of my Airbnb cut, you know, so it totally works for me. But a lot of people want to make even more. So they're going to like search for unlisted places. They're going to do all the renovations, right, whatever. But you got to know like what you know and what you don't know. And I don't really know about renovation. I've just started to like dabble in it with other people's homes that I help manage. But it's kind of a hassle.
Yeah, you know? I guess your time is a trade-off too. But who goes to Home Goods and buys all the pillows to make it look like a really cute Airbnb or yard sales at the first initial furnishing?
Yeah, so I fly out for that.
Okay.
So what I do is I figure out what day that I'm going to close, and I usually make that like a Friday or Saturday. And then I fly in like Thursday, and then I'll do like all the garage sales like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and start like furnishing the home right away. And then from there, I go like Craigslist. I usually start talking to people and like find stuff on Craigslist before I show up, just so I have things ready and like can get as many people to deliver as possible, and then go around and pick stuff up. And then I'll hit up all the like thrift stores and then consignment stores. And then if I have to buy something new, I will do it. But that's kind of my, like, thing. And it's way more time-consuming that way, but it's, like, really fun for me. I actually love furnishing, and it's, like, the creative fun space. So I'll do that, and I think I save, like, tons of money doing it that way. But,
oh, you know, absolutely.
Like time versus money.
Dang. So do you still have time to give people massages?
You know, I stopped doing that. I kept up with the whole massage thing for a few years. I officially dropped it last year in November, but it was one of those things like when you talk to people that are going to retire and they're like scared to do it because it's their safety net. I had like weaned myself off of massage so much that I was only really making like a couple $100 a month. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Why do I still do this? You know, like, why am I paying like rent at an office and like keeping up with clients and having to be somewhere at a certain time, when like with Airbnb, I can be making the same amount of money if I'm home or abroad, and I can do things in my own spare time. Like, it's all just like really flexible. So I just knew I had to let it go. But it was scary. It's just funny how that stuff is, like psychological.
But now you have those skills for future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know my significant other would appreciate if I knew how to massage or something crazy like that.
I can give you some pointers at FinCon.
Okay. Since we're going to run a massage booth at our hotel.
I'm completely untrained, like, you know, formally, but I've never heard somebody complain about my massages. So I can give you some pointers.
Nice.
So going on this subject, and we can remove this from the podcast if you don't want to talk about it. Gwen was telling me that something about a relationship shaman. What is that? Can we talk about this?
Totally. That's funny. I don't know too much about this. So actually, I was asking for a friend. So sometimes do you see that stuff on Facebook and you're like, are they really asking for a friend? Are they just like too chicken to say that they want that, you know? But okay, I live in Boulder, and everyone's like a little health nut, you know? We're all like conscious and hippies and kumbaya. So there's a lot more.
Crunchy granola.
Totally. there's a lot more shamans and psychics and healers and all that stuff here. So it's like way more common. But a relationship shaman, so essentially what a shaman does is they take you back. They do these things called journeys, and they sort of put you in like a meditative, almost hypnotized state, but it's really just a meditation. And they take you back through your life, and they retrieve pieces of your soul that got lost in your life.
Oh my.
Yes. Based on like times that you were traumatized. So if something really intense happens in your life, supposedly you like lose a piece of yourself there and it gets stuck. And so they go back and they can go into past lives and whatever. So if you're working in a relationship, you know, two people have a certain amount of karma that like attracts them to each other. And so if they're having issues, you can go see if there were past lives that these souls were together, or, you know, if there are things that are feeding off of each other or whatever. So essentially that's what I think it is. I am not an expert though.
Wow. This sounds like Harry Potter and Horcruxes for any Harry Potter fans out there. You got to collect them all to figure out and become whole.
But you know what? There is some therapy ideas out there that if people do have trauma, talking about it and like going through it, because people just like block it off, right? And they don't even, you know, they try not to think about it anymore. And then it said that, you know, their personal level of growth stopped there. So if you go and talk about it, you're able to move past it, you know, and start growing again as a person. So like I can kind of see where they're going at that, but
yeah,
man, pass souls together, and that's,
don't knock it till you try it. There are so many cool things that people are doing out there. I think there's a lot of awesome stuff. There's definitely, I'm kind of like a geek in this realm, so we don't need to go down this path, but there are like hypnotists that do, they call it life between lives work. And so they take you like into a space between lives. So like what happens when you die and where you go and what your soul is doing in that time. And they can like talk to you about that. And then there are ones that do past life regression and they take you through different lives. I mean, there's crazy stuff. And you're there and you're present and you remember everything and you see it. So the experience is very real to you. So that's like the kind of stuff that makes you a believer. So I think try it.
You know, if I could go to anybody like that in my area, I would totally give it a shot for, you know, at least once. But
I will send you someone.
I think that the Midwest is a little bit more grounded than people in Colorado. And I'm overgeneralizing terribly here, but
yeah,
I'm just trying to think if I've, you know, driven past a shop or anything, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, okay. I'm into that stuff kind of too. Like not in that way, but more in the like, lately I've been doing yoga. It's a new thing. I know that's like the baby step because everyone does yoga, but maybe I could get there.
Awesome.
You know, totally. Like next I'm going to download the Headspace app for meditation because people really like that. Maybe I can climb the ladder there. All right. So I do want to ask you, remote property management for Airbnb, how do you even secure those opportunities?
Oh, for me to manage for other people?
Yeah, out of state.
Yeah, you know, people hear about me from just different promotional things I've done. And so then they ask me if I will do it. And it's not that hard to set up. So I had to figure all that out when I was buying my St. Louis places. It took some trial and error, but I figured out essentially you just need to hire a couple of cleaners. So you have like a backup. You need to find a good handyman, which you can even ask the owners of the home if they know anybody who has some contacts. And then most things can be found online through like, you know, you can look just generally, but they also have like TaskRabbit and Angie's List. So there's ways to find all of these people online. Like it's fine. And, you know, sometimes you hire people and they don't work out and then you have to get other people, like whatever, but it's not the end of the world. And then one thing that I've started doing that I didn't do before, but it's really helped, is I hire someone to be like a general area manager, especially if I have multiple homes. And I'll just pay them like $100 a month to be like on call. And then I pay them like $20 an hour. And essentially, if any kind of emergency goes down, they can go check out the house or they can go meet the guests that can't figure out how to get in or, you know, whatever. And it ends up being like a pretty low cost thing, but it like saves you so many times. Because it's definitely like a little more stressful when you can't just like get in your car and go help someone.
Right. I could totally see that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's awesome. So one thing we do at the end of each podcast is we ask our guests one final question. Mm-hmm. Jay?
Ziana, what is your wildest dream?
Oh, I love these questions. You know, I kind of want to come up with something really wild. But so essentially, crazy. Like, I just want to write books. I just think that that sounds like the most relaxing and sweet thing. That I want to get to a place where my business is completely automated so I retire again. Because I had like 2 years of being retired and then I built this co-hosting business. And yeah, I would love to retire and have this business continue to make the pretty substantial amount that it's making, maybe a little bit less, and then write books and have time for myself and like go and speak and do things like that where it's like way more creative and not so much managerial, because I've kind of been there and done that. And it's not my like my favorite happy space, you know? So yeah, I want to try my hand at that. It's not that wild. I feel like
we were expecting something a little crazier after the relationship shaman conversation that we had.
Well, I can tell you something sneaky. I am in psychic school, and it's just something fun that I do on the side, but I definitely have been developing that.
That's amazing.
Did you know that that was going to be our last question?
What? No, I didn't. It doesn't work.
Still learning. Way.
So Ziana, if our listeners want to learn more about you or get in contact with you, where can they find you?
My website is zianamcintyre.com, and I blog about Airbnb and travel hacking and early retirement. So if they want to know about any of that stuff, that's the best place.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. I think I learned a lot. And Gwen, we really need to step outside of our comfort zone. We're too boring right now.
Yep.
That's going to be one of my goals.
Totally.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Before we go, we just wanted to let you know about our giveaway that we're doing right now. If you leave us a review in iTunes by searching for Fire Drill Podcast, Fire Space Drill Space Podcast, and leave us a review, an honest review, then we will enter you into a contest to win Pat Flynn's Will It Fly. Will It Fly is an awesome business book. I read it last summer and it actually helped me launch my Etsy business. I highly recommend it. And we're going to give away a copy to one lucky listener for free. So if you want to multitask right now, search for Fire Drill Podcast, leave us a review, take a screenshot, and email it to firedrillpodcast@gmail.com. We would love that. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.